Welcome to Beyond the Arc. My name is Phil Nasons. He's Kevin Leip, and we're here to talk Memphis Grizzlies basketball with you tonight. How are you doing, Kevin?
I am good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. The jinxed show continues.
Yeah, we always miss a week right after we make a really good plan for a show.
We had a great plan, and then I forgot what it was. But it's all good, though. We want to thank Memphis Flyer for presenting this show. You can find us at beyondthearcpod.com. I think that's what it is. See, because I lose my rhythm because we every other week, it seems. But it's all good, and we're really happy to be here, and we're happy to talk about Dylan Brooks tonight. Dylan Brooks is a rising star, or was. When was the last time a Grizzly player, I was trying to think, when was the last time a Grizzly made the young guys game?
I think O.J. Mayo made it.
Yeah,
that's what I thought. I think he made it maybe as a sophomore. I can't remember if it was his rookie year. It was back when it was still the rookie sophomore game. I can't remember if it was his first or second year, but I'm pretty sure he made it.
I got all bamboozled there talking about Trae Young off the air. But honestly speaking, I thought he was okay. I like Dylan Brooks. I thought he did really well. I kind of thought, you know, when the season started to go awry, that all those minutes he was getting was a good thing, that he would make a very good, dependable backup for someone, serviceable bench player, I guess you call them. But now I'm starting to reconsider a little bit. I think if he was in a better situation, he would flourish because he didn't look that bad in that game.
No, he really didn't. I made a joke on Twitter that he was, you know, that was a very flashy game. I mean, the world team that he was on was really led by the Sixers, basically,
right.
Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. And it was a really like high-paced, flashy game with a lot of dunks and a lot of fast breaks. And that's not really his game. That's not really Dylan's game. So I made the joke. It's like, you know, who needs dunks when you can have gritty hustle plays and three-pointers? But, you know, ultimately he did establish himself in that game just through that. He was making hustle plays. He hit some threes. He ended up with a dunk. He did what he does. And he made his presence known. I think he ended with 11 points. You know, that game doesn't really mean a whole lot, but it is good to see your guys, you know, showing skills in that game. I mean, that was, he came to play. It was kind of his night to get to hang out in L.A. and be one of the cool kids, and he took advantage of it.
Well, I would, too. You know, he finished with 11 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists in 16 minutes, including 1-for-5 from 3. But, you know, they're encouraged to shoot that 3 ball in those games. And it is what it is. I was impressed with him. I've been slowly impressed with him the entire season. He made a couple turnovers too, I guess, but so what? You know, it was really nice to see something good come out of this season. Because yeah. I don't even think this tank is working out the way it should be.
Yeah, not really. You know, I think Brooks clearly a steal in the second round. I don't think he's like, if you redid the draft, I still don't think he'd be a lottery pick, really. That was a very full draft. But he would go in the first round for sure. And I think, you know, I just think he's shown that he's an NBA player. I think he could be like, depending on the situation, he could be like the fifth starter on a playoff team. I don't think he's ever going to be like a superstar, but you know, he's kind of like, he could be like a Shane Battier.
That's not a bad comparison, really. I don't like comparing players, but in that kind of role, he'd be all right. I like his grit and his grind, honestly. Congratulations, Dilly Dilly. Dilly Dilly. I even tweeted out during the game, Dilly Dilly.
Yeah, I'm still avoiding that like the plague. I refuse to say it.
Well, I mocked it for a while there, but I figured out that was kind of like my mock of the whole thing. But I don't mind. I like Dylan Brooks. Why not? I joined the club for like an hour. That's all. And it's okay because I've been out of the club on a lot of things this year, but so far so good. But the trade deadline has come and gone. And of course, I'm the only one who thought that Tyreek wasn't going anywhere. I think I'm the only one, probably. I think people want to hang me, by the way, for this. As if I had something to do with it.
They should hang the front office. Yeah, I think, you know, they had deals on the table and they weren't deals that they wanted to take. You know, I think they were very, they like Tyreek and Tyreek likes it in Memphis. And so I think if they didn't get what they wanted, which was a first round pick and some sort of asset, you know, not a bunch of expiring money, not a old guy on a big contract, they weren't going to deal him. You know, I think they just, especially after the Lou Williams deal,
right?
I think they got the sense that, you know, looking at the free agency market this summer, that they may be able to get Tyreek for the mid-level somewhere around there, which is what they're going to have to offer. And I think they just decided, you know, I think if we offer him the mid-level, he might stay and take that because he likes it here. And so we don't have any pressure to trade him if we don't get what we want. And then, you know, somewhat atypical to how the Grizzlies usually are, they actually didn't trade the guy when they didn't get what they wanted. You know, they didn't settle. They didn't get taken advantage of, and you know, they didn't make a bad trade. I still think they should trade him, but you know, I heard some of what was on the table, and you know, I don't think I would have traded him for that either. They just never got the offer that they actually wanted.
Well, I've been against the idea from the beginning, and I know that is probably an unpopular position, and that's okay. I can live with that. But when I started listening to what he was saying, he wants to stay.
He does.
And the Grizzlies can make a way for that to happen. And I had to try to correct somebody on Twitter, but that's always a mistake, you know, always. You know, I know that this is going to come as a hard thing to believe, but teams talk to their players all season because they, like, work for them. And I don't think it's out of reach to assume that the Grizzlies have spoken to him prior to not trading him. I know they're not supposed to, but you know what? You're not supposed to jaywalk too, but most people do. So there you go.
Yeah, I jaywalked on the way back to my office from lunch
today.
See,
there you go. Case in point. And Kevin is about as straight-laced as you come.
You know, I think, well, so on the night before the deadline, the Wednesday night before the deadline, there was a
home
game.
By the way, I prayed at the church for this, by the way, and lit two candles.
There you go.
There you go.
One of the candles is like Tyreek on a candle, like a...
Both of them.
St. Tyreek. But
no, I'm sorry. I wanted Chandler Parsons out.
Oh, yeah. So
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Parsons was never going anywhere. No one wants that contract. That's the worst contract in the league.
We'll get to that in a minute. I'm sorry. I keep interrupting you because I'm so ecstatic about Tyreek being still a Grizzly.
So, I kind of took the temperature in the room. The Wednesday night before the deadline, they had a home game, and I was up there kind of talking to people. And, you know, it was after the Lou Williams deal, and people were generally, the response I got was kind of, you know, we don't feel like it's crazy for us to keep him if we don't get what we want. You know, he likes it here and we like him. And, you know, if we trade him, we're not going to be able to re-sign him. So, if we don't get what we want, I don't think that we have the same pressure. You know, I heard that from two different Grizzlies executives. So that was definitely their mindset going in. And you know, I kind of asked the question, well, you've been sitting this guy for a week. Like, doesn't that kind of look bad? And the response I got, which is the truth, is like, well, you know, we've had an open line of communication with him while he's been on the bench. He's been sitting down. That was the line, right? So, they're not supposed to talk about, well, are you going to sign this summer and that kind of thing. And it doesn't make a whole lot of sense for him to agree to that if he's going to get more money somewhere else. And even if he did, anything they have is going to be verbal. So like if somebody offers him $20 million, he can still leave. But, you know, I think they just kind of came to an understanding that Tyreek likes it here and Marc Gasol likes him and the front office likes him. And I think obviously the fans like him. And, you know, I think they decided they didn't want to get rid of him, even though that would have made it easier for them to tank.
And maybe they made a good decision. More assets.
Yeah, I think it'll work out.
Of course it will. I know the bloggers were upset a little bit there, Kevin, but you know what? You can't have everything. You have Chandler Parsons. You still have your guy. So, but seriously though, I was ecstatic. You know, all kidding aside, I enjoy watching him play basketball. I've always been a fan of Tyreek Evans. He just never could stay healthy, and this season he has. And you know, it was bizarre though. When they told him to come out off the court and go back to the hotel, I think it was in Chicago.
It was Indiana.
I'm sorry. Yeah, same area, I guess. Anyway, it's in the Midwest, but it's close. But here's the deal. I started feeling bad. I'm thinking they're going to trade him for a bag of chips. And they kept him. So now what does that do to the tank, though? Because, well, he hasn't exactly lit the world on fire in his return, but at least he's there.
Yeah. I will say that when they sent him back to the hotel, they thought he was getting traded in the next couple of days. Like, they right. had some stuff working, and that was, that was not, they did not think they were going to be sitting him out for a whole week when they did that. What was your question?
Well, I my thing is, I'm sorry. And this time I didn't interrupt you.
I forgot.
That's okay. Myself. It's tough. Old age is hard, man. I'm telling you, you're getting older, brother. But here's the deal. What does this do to the tank? Because, when he came back after that weird week off, he didn't exactly light the world on fire. He looked out of rhythm. I think he looked a bit shocked that he was still there.
Yeah.
What do you think is going to happen with the tank now? Because I opine that they probably are going to finish. I'm at Creative Sports where I write. I thought perhaps that they would finish around 24th in the NBA this year. Is that about right, you think?
I don't know. See, that's so. My take on not trading him has always kind of been, I understand why they did it, but it's probably not what I would have done.
Right.
And that's why, right? I mean, if you keep Tyreek at the deadline and he makes you win 6 extra games, well, then you're picking 9th instead of 5th.
Right.
And that's a big difference in talent in this draft.
I think you're right.
And the other thing is, if you keep him, you could keep him and pick 9th instead of 5th, and then someone else offers him a lot of money and he leaves anyway. That's
right.
That's bad scenario one. But, if you want to assume that they have some kind of gentleman's agreement that he's not going to leave, well, you still could pick 9th instead of 5th and then re-sign him at the mid-level, and then he gets hurt and doesn't play.
Right.
And then you made your pick worse for a guy who's not even playing. And that's just as bad, right? That's a disaster.
Right.
So that's why I would have traded him. He's had a great season this year. I love watching him play. It's nothing against him, but it's they don't need these guys with injury track records. If healthy is like the buzzword for this entire era of Grizzlies basketball, if healthy. And you cannot add any more injury liabilities to this team. That's also going to make your draft pick worse in the one year that you're probably gonna be really bad. Cause I do think keeping him, if he's going to play at the same level he's been playing at, which, maybe Tyreek's going to tank the rest of the year too. He's been in this situation a lot. But you could really make your draft pick a lot worse just by keeping him on the floor.
You could. That's a very good point. And we have to take that point into consideration. Now, I did a preview over at Creative Sports for all the divisions for the second half. And I'm trying to pull it up because I'm an old guy too. And sometimes I forget. But here we go. It is the Southwest Division. And what I thought with the Grizzlies, this is what I said, Kevin. I forgot to send it to you. Maybe you saw it on Twitter. I don't know. But I said the season of disaster will continue for the Grizzlies, and I would be surprised if the Grizzlies win 8 of their last 26 games. And here's why I said that. Because they have 26 games remaining this season, and 16 of those games are against teams with 500 records or better. And they're not very good against those teams. So I think that the tank is probably still good with Tyreek or without him. Because remember, they were with him and he was losing all them games.
Yeah, I mean, they were definitely better. But without him, they did not win a game.
They ain't won that many with him, though.
Exactly. Yeah.
They have 18 wins total. I mean, there are six teams tied.
I think what you're going to see the rest of the year is, his minutes are going to be limited. He's going to play 20 minutes a night and be done. You're going to see a lot of Ben McLemore, the $5 million tank. It is what it is. I think JB Bickerstaff is, on the one hand, he's trying to play these teams close and prove that he knows how to coach these young guys up so that they consider him for the head coaching job. And on the other hand, he's got to prove that he can also be a company man and throw games, basically.
All right. That's not fun either.
So he's kind of caught in the middle too. But I just, they're still bad. I mean, without Parsons, without Conley, with the limitations that they have, especially if you're going to play your older good players limited minutes, I mean, they're just not going to be very good. They're not going to be as bad as the Kings, but they're not good.
I don't know. I think that they're probably, the Kings have a pretty decent schedule, I think. But because like I said, I broke them all down, but I'm an old fella. I don't remember now. I have to look them all up. But my thing with Tyreek and the whole tanking business is at least they were entertaining while they're tanking. I mean, you could have like the 76ers and like win 12 games or something.
Yeah.
That's not cool. And I'm also thinking about the fans because as the voice of the fan base, I feel the necessary need to do this because they're going to leave the Grizzlies. We talked about this before. You've got this younger fan base who've never seen them lose, and they like to see the Grizzlies win, and the Grizzlies ain't winning, and they ain't going to win next year either.
Well, we can talk about next year. I think next year they could be good if they're healthy, but
okay, that's
they're
fair.
Probably not going to be healthy, right? I mean, if anything has been true about the Grizzlies is that they're not going to be healthy. But, you know, I think I think you're right. I'm actually working on a big feature for the newspaper, for the print paper. I think it's going to come out in a couple of weeks about, you know, why you should still watch the Grizzlies this year.
I think that's a great thing, and I hope I'm quoted at least three times in this.
Well, but you're right. I mean, and that's kind of what it is. Like they are kind of fun to watch, even though they're not good, right? These young guys get out there, and Andrew Harrison scored 28 points and got kicked out the other night, right?
That's
fun.
No, okay. Thanks for bringing that up, by the way. This is a perfect segue. You're running the show tremendously tonight. Here's the deal. That made me irritated. Here's this kid who doesn't say anything to anybody, who's out there busting his butt, and thank goodness that JB Bickerstaff, the interim head coach, who probably won't be there next year either, but had the foresight and the, how do I put this in a correct way? Oh, the heck with it. Who actually understands basketball and basketball players better than, say, I don't know, the other one. And what happened is he put him at point guard, and the kid has flourished. He plays good defense. I mean, he tries. He's a quiet kid on the court. He tries his best. He played really good the other night. And when he got teed up, did you see the look on his face? My Lord, he was shocked. And he said something, which he doesn't usually do, right?
Right, yeah. Well, I mean, the first tech, too. I mean, Harrison and Bickerstaff both got technicals in that game. For basically doing the same thing Russell Westbrook was doing, you know, complaining about calls.
And with this Westbrook.
Well, I don't know what the deal is. It's league wide with refs this year. They're calling so many technicals. They're like trying to keep the players in line by calling technical fouls, and all that's doing is making the players mad. It's like every player in the league is Boogie now, and they're just going to tee him up every time they mouth off instead of, you know, doing the right thing and kind of cooling everything off. They're calling these technical fouls, and they're kind of escalating their frustration levels.
They're doing it
around the league. I don't understand the deal. I know they were having some kind of sit down with the Players Association and the Refs Association over All-Star Weekend to kind of hash some of this stuff out. But I hope they did, because it's been annoying. I mean, you know, the refs have been a presence this year in a way that they usually aren't, and it hasn't been a good one. They've been calling technical fouls and kicking people out of basketball games.
Well, you know what it is. This is my opinion. Now, I don't have any insight into this. I don't have a source with the referees. But it seems to me that they have, 8 to 10 new refs? And it's these guys that are doing all the bouncing. So they probably are trying to establish themselves. Because I saw Carmelo Anthony being interviewed a few weeks back. And he said, back in the old days, like he's an old guy. He said, when I came into the league, I could talk to the referees right away. We established a relationship, and I saw those same guys throughout my career until this year. And half these guys, I don't know, and they don't want to know us. And I think that that's part of the problem, because if you're a good official, you're also a very good communicator. You can tell those guys, hey, cool it, or one of you are going. And they usually do. You don't have to ref with your whistle all the time. And I think those old guys kind of had it there. You know, guys could blow off a little steam because these old fellas or older fellas knew these guys. And they knew, okay, you know what? This guy missed a shot. He's having a tough day. Maybe the referee knows him personally and knows he's having problems at home. So he's going to let him blow off a little bit. But these young guys, like Cain Fitzgerald, for example, I don't remember who he booted, but he booted this guy, a star. Oh, he booted Steph Curry. And I was like, wow. And it's funny how these veteran superstars, if you will, Curry's been bounced, LeBron James never been bounced until this year. Durant should have been bounced many times in his career, so I think they're just paying him back.
Curry
Westbrook the
got
same.
bounced in Memphis for throwing his mouthpiece at the ref. That was kind of a
That's right, he did. But you know what? And Boogie Cousins got bounced. Well, Boogie is another one, but Boogie got bounced for grabbing a rebound and turning with his elbows out and hit Russell Westbrook. He says, wait a second now. This is the way I've been taught how to do this my whole life. I can't help it. I'm 7 foot and he's 6 foot 1. You know, that's his problem. See, the whole thing is, and then they're not consistent, but they don't communicate with these guys. Now, that's what I'm seeing. Maybe I'm completely off base there, but that's what I think it is.
No, I think that's a good analysis of what's going on. I mean, I think I hadn't seen that Carmelo thing.
Oh, yeah, I watch a lot more than I should, I think.
I think that's a really good analysis, though. I mean, I think it does seem like they are, you know, my wife is a teacher, and there are some teachers who have good classroom management, and there are some teachers who don't.
Right, I know all about that, sure.
And if you don't have it, it's really hard to get it.
Oh,
And
yeah.
if you do have it, you don't have to work that hard to keep it, right? Like it's a respect thing. It's the way you deal with the kids. It's the way you communicate with the kids. It's about being firm, but not, you know, I think that's consistency. I think it's, you know, it's like you said, you need to be able to tell the guys to cool off or they're going to get tossed because they know that you are actually going to toss them if they don't cool it off, right?
Well, right,
But
yeah.
you also don't just jump to like call a double technical on two guys for just jawing at each other. Like that's
Well,
the
that's
dumbest thing
stupid.
ever.
Well, that's the dumbest thing ever. You know, I coached tennis for a long time, and now I just do it in the summer only because of the kids, because I really like them. But here's the thing, they follow me on Twitter, they're asking me questions all day long, and you know how I am. I respond immediately to you, no matter who you are, and if I know you. And the thing is this, when I'm on the tennis court with them, I can be very difficult. They understand that though. Now it's
You
after,
can be difficult.
yeah, you will, of course, because you know I'm afraid they're going to get hurt because they're swinging rackets and not paying attention. But yeah, I can be a little difficult, old school. But you know the thing is that one of the kids says, you know, you kind of be a little gruff sometimes. He said, but man, you're fair. And he said, you're also really different away from tennis. And that's cool. And that's what you have to be. I think your wife is probably the same way. She's firm and they don't mess with her. They respect that because she's consistent. The referees, none of those. They're none of those right now. And these veterans aren't stepping in and doing the job. They're just sitting back and going, huh? And collecting their cash. Not to say they're bad refs, but it's atrocious.
Yeah, and they've also like I think Monty McCutcheon was kind of one of the good ones, and they've pulled him out of actually reffing games, and he's in charge of this like referee development program now. So like they've lost good refs. I mean Joey Crawford that was extremely unpopular, and I used to hate him until I actually paid attention. He was a really good ref. You
No,
know, it was
very good
very
refs,
very
yeah.
fair. Don't tell a Spurs fan that.
Oh, you know what? This is really interesting that you bring this up because a couple years ago, Wilco was on my show. Do you remember the time that he yelled at the ball boy for not drying off the court correctly?
Yeah, I do.
Wilco was defending him. He said, "Are you kidding me? That's his job." Because people were killing him for this.
Yeah.
Look, he's trying to protect the players. The players didn't get upset by that. It was the fans. And I think what you've seen is that those guys have been kind of championed off, if you will. And now you've got these younger guys who at one time it was like three or four referees a year and only two of them were full-time new guys. And now you've got almost half a dozen full-time and then a few extra guys who are working some games. That's just too many. because you need these guys need that consistency. You don't know what's going to happen. Now you got fights. I mean, you had who was it that squared off at the free throw line? What was it? Was it oh, it was Aaron Aflalo for the Magic. Squared off with one kid, and that was nuts.
Was it Bielica? Bielica or whatever?
Yeah, that's who it was, Bielica. Yeah, and he got tossed. And the bad thing is it was his turn at first start. I mean, but that shouldn't have happened.
No.
None of those things should have happened. But these guys, you don't know what to expect from them. I mean, it's horrific. And I don't know what kind of thing is going to get accomplished, Kevin, when you're talking about it during the middle of the season.
Yeah, it's way too late.
Publicizing it, too.
It's only going to get worse in the playoffs.
Well, you know what, though? It might be easier for them because it'll be a half-court game. Maybe they'll put four refs out there for the playoffs.
Well, they're actually experimenting with that in the D-League. I went to the points of emphasis briefing that they do in the preseason, where the refs actually sit down with media guys and kind of talk about what the points of emphasis are this year, show you the clips of plays, like this is a foul this year, this is not a foul this year, that we call this year, that kind of thing.
Right.
And that's one of the things they talked about in the D-League. They're actually experimenting with four refs and having kind of two trail refs. So any like two refs behind the play.
Right. I think that might work. But then again, it'd be confusing for them. You're using G League refs to do this, so now you're going to bring these NBA guys who've been working the three-man and a two-man for most of their lives, and now you got to teach them how to work a four-man and get in different positions. That ought to be real interesting. But back to Andrew Harrison real quick, and that was a great segue because we've been wanting to talk about this for a while. But I like what I've seen out of him since he's been moved to the point guard, and I hope that I think his future is that of a backup, unless, of course, the Grizzlies make the second biggest mistake of their drafting and signing period by drafting Trae Young. I hope they don't. I'd rather see Andrew Harrison come back next year and be the backup point guard to Conley.
I think, I think they kept Chalmers because they weren't sure about Harrison. Harrison almost got cut in the preseason.
Right.
But the thing that has Bickerstaff has said this several times. They had that game at Atlanta. I don't know if you watched that game or not, but it was terrible.
Oh yeah, and, sure. When they had the 2-day layover.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, sure. That was.
Can't imagine what they got up to in Atlanta, but but you know Harrison was terrible in that game, and the next night in Memphis he played pretty well, and after that game. And he said this multiple times since then. Bickerstaff said, you know, they sat Andrew down after that Atlanta game and had a, quote, uncomfortable conversation with him. Basically, my understanding is they were like, you know, if you play that bad again, like, you're going to be out of the league next year.
Wow.
Like, if you can't do better than that, then you're going to get cut. And this is what he's responded with. He's had two 20-point games, almost 30 the other night. You know, he's shooting so much better. That's to me, that's the big difference for him because he's always been a very heady player. He's always been a good defender, but his shot was just not that reliable. Now that he's kind of finding his shot, that makes him a lot more dangerous. And that's, you know, I think if he can shoot a little bit better, I see him as a, you know, backup point guard on an okay team or like a third point guard that still gets to play on a really good team. I mean, I think that's kind of what he's going to be. You know, kind of like an Ish Smith. Ish Smith has been in the league for like 7 years now, and he's always the third point guard on a team, and he, you know, plays always 35 games a year or 40 games a year, and he's just hangs around in the league because he's good. I think that's kind of where Harrison's going to be, but there's no shame in that. I mean, he's a good basketball player.
I think so too. And you know, the one thing that concerns me a bit though, Kevin, is his usage. Mm-hmm. Last season it was at 16%. This year it's at 19%, and he's basically scoring at the same level. Although you mentioned his shooting percentages are way up this year. He's at 45% now from the field, and his free throw percentage is at 81%, up from 76% from last year, from 1 year ago. So there's good things here, but when you see a guy, this is just my opinion, but when you see a guy with a usage bump like that and nothing else changed, that usually doesn't bode well. That means he's not being aggressive. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I know what you mean. I think some of that is, I think some of that is just the limitations of the team. He's such a slow decision maker, and he's a slow point guard that he kind of can't make anything happen if he's not making it happen for himself.
That's a good point.
If the guys aren't there for him to, you know, just dump the pass off really fast. So I think some of that is a limitation of the team, but it's also just him. He's just slow. But he's so big. He's like 6'5", 6'6".
He is big, and he doesn't look that big, but I guess he is. You know, you can see him up close every night. So
yeah,
I guess it's different. But his assists are down this year. This is what I'm talking about with the usage, because that's all part of it. And that's, again, because it's, well, you know what? I guess you probably nailed that one, because
everybody's assists are down.
Well, yeah, because you're right. Okay, we got time for one more.
I think Tyreek's assists are actually up.
Tyreek's everything is up, man. And I'm up too, because he's here. See, I'm just happy. I gloated on Twitter. Did you see this?
I did see that.
No one wanted to talk to me about it, because you know why. Because I've been telling them the whole time, shut up, mind your business, and just let people who know the game talk about it. And it makes me sad. I'm not talking about the commercial appeal guys either, by the way. I'm directing my ire and my thrill toward a couple. Anyway, we got time for one more?
Sure.
Okay, quick. We'll do this quick. Somebody tweeted at me, what was it? Oh, I guess it was right after Zach's tribute video. No, I take that back. It was when Tony Allen got cut from Chicago. Mm-hmm. And now they think that because Dwayne Wade got traded, it was at the trade deadline. When Dwayne Wade got traded, and, you know, LeBron did his friend a favor and sent him so he could be closer to his kids and live in the same house again when he sent him to Miami, people think that because of that, that the Grizzlies can bring back Tony and Zach, and it's the same thing. And I tried to be gentle about it, because I'm a big fan of both of them, more Zach than Tony, although I love Tony because Tony always retweets our show, or used to. And anyway, what do you think? They don't come back, right?
No, I don't think they come back. I mean, for one thing, I wouldn't be surprised if somebody actually picks up Tony at some point.
Oh, well, why wouldn't they?
You know, the Thunder are sitting out there without Robertson. They need somebody to play defense. And that's kind of all Tony can do anymore. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if somebody like that just at least gets him on a 10-day to kick the tires for a playoff run. I mean, why wouldn't you?
I heard the Thunder, actually. Did I tell you I did a Thunder show the other night?
You did. I'm very surprised.
I'm doing another one Saturday night on Facebook Live, the Welcome to Loud City Facebook page. I don't have the link in my head, but you all want to have some fun? Go over to that. No, it was weird. But they were talking about Tony Allen, and I had to kind of teach them about Tony Allen, because, you know, they don't really know, because it's not their job to know, really. They've covered one team, right? But so I dropped a little insight. I say, you know, his steals, there's a reason for that. You know, he had great defenders behind him, or guys who could at least back him up.
Yeah.
And he gambled all the time and made everybody irritable because he would do that. And it's nothing to knock. It's the truth, right?
Yeah. And when it worked, nobody cared.
Right. Know? But sometimes it didn't toward the end. And that's what I was trying to throw caution to my Thunder friends. Mm-hmm. I do have a couple, but my God, you should have seen the comments I was getting, Kevin. For real.
I believe it. Yeah, those Thunder people are intense. I can't imagine what they're going to be like with it.
You have no idea. I am the number one basher of Thunder. There is.
I do know that.
You know that. You even made a comment. Oh, by the way, I have to clear this up real quick before we go. Yes, some people saw that I am writing once a week at Sonics Rising. I'm a Seattle Supersonics fan. When they got shucked off to the Thunder, I became a Grizzlies fan, and that's how I met Kevin. But I know those guys a long time, and when they were told they might get a team, they wanted to start doing basketball again, and I was being cheeky on Twitter on Saturday night, and they basically hired me on Twitter. So people were asking, is Phil leaving this show? Well, no. No.
It's
no,
contractually obligated, folks.
For a long time, like a lifetime contract. As long as Kevin is here, I'm here. So, well, don't worry, folks. The voice of the Grizzly fan base will be here next week. Kevin will be here next week, right?
And you know, unless the Grizzlies move to Seattle.
Right, that's a good one. For Kevin Leip, I'm Phil Nasons. We want to thank you for listening to Beyond the Arc.